Wow, that's the clap.
There we go.
Clap
of something. There we go. It's the 5th of April. Is that the end or the start of the tax year, DC?
That is the end.
It's the end. So we've still got time to slam some money into the old ISA.
Get your ISA, non-stop emails about what you should be, clever things you should be investing in. Possibly not the market, which had a bit of a wobble yesterday. Maybe the two are related. Who knows? But
so we're a little bit late to the party on the March edition of Horizon, because as I say, we're already on the 5th of April. We normally try to get them out a bit quicker, but we had to navigate Easter.
Yep.
A lot of people been away, enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. And, of course, April Fool's Day.
Yes, yeah.
I didn't see any financial market April Fool's
particularly. No, you probably got to be, in this, anti-finfluencer day and age, you've probably got to be quite careful on these sort of things. If you sort of say there's been a run on X or something on Y, you probably could find yourself being tapped on the shoulder. So I didn't see many. I saw a few non-financial, but not in the markets.
Well, I mean, not on April Fool's, all the good calls. Just a recap of things that have kind of, if you've been a reader of Horizon over the past few months, DT, what would you be on the ball on now?
Well, your speciality, auto callables. There's been some news out there. Certainly, the Korean regulator came along and said, enough is enough here. We're looking at having a look into mis-selling here. And actually, there was an article I read, I can't remember where it was, a couple of days ago, saying that the issuance, funnily enough, has collapsed of those products coming out of Korea in the last month, down some 50%. So I suppose that goes to show, really, the minute the regulator starts having a good close look around, the banks will try and get away with it for as long as they can. But actually, if there's perceived mis-selling going on, that funnily enough, closes the door quite rapidly.
Yeah, and recall that the call that we're making, or because I think we're still making it, the call's not necessarily made, is not necessarily about Korea. All we're pointing out is that, the sale of auto callables in markets like Korea is a result of prolonged low interest rates. But prolonged low interest rates have been a global phenomenon. And so we expect there to have been more selling of this globally in markets that people may not necessarily be so aware of. And if you've had one regulator flexing its muscles, maybe others will follow suit. Then you've either got the other situation where if you've got all these successful structurers who've been making money in a product that are now having to be relocated to other places, then they may pop up in other markets, in other regions, because they can't necessarily ply their trade in Asia where they've been used to doing that. And that happens in the financial markets. So we'll see how that one unfolds. We've been scratching our heads over markets and saying to everyone, we felt that May, sell in May was going to be really apt this year. We don't want to call it too early, but it does sound like there was a bit of negative action overnight, DC. What was going on there?
That was, it's a classic sort of headlines that sound horrendous. I mean, you look back to when we used to trade a long time ago, when, a market might move 5-6% down. I think the market was down about 1%, maybe a bit more, but there were a lot of very panicky headlines. And I think it was triggered mostly by one Fed member came out and said, we might not be cutting rates as aggressively as the market's expecting. I think they started off at 4 cuts, now we're maybe at 2 possibly. And I think he was sort of saying, maybe let's not get too carried away. And that was enough, the sort of higher for longer, which we have, as you quite rightly mentioned, talked about. If that becomes more priced in, not great English there, sorry, that's a concern. So, and actually, I think that's what you see the market sort of looking through that. And you saw a sell-off yesterday. We'll be interested to see if it carries on.
It's certainly, the area to scrutinize is around the row hedging, because, people will have lifted hedges. They may not have had hedges in place last year and breathe a sigh of relief as everything moves back their way. And, really, this is now the kind of inflection point at where, people really need to start scrutinising that risk, because, this could be quite ugly, for the bond market. And I think we've already seen a bit of a move in the bonds as well. So something to definitely focus on.
Just to butt in again, you finally saw a bit of a move in the VIX yesterday, as you'd expect. Obviously, VIX measures the volatility of the S&P. But with the low vol, we've seen a bit like going back to the water callables in a way. We were in a very low interest rate environment, and we have been in a very low equity volatility environment. And actually, that encourages leverage. That encourage, you know, because all your, if you think about it, all the pricing models you use, volatility is an important component of that. So if that's at a very low number, you know, it allows leverage to creep in, more and more leverage to creep in, because you, as you mark these things, you go, well, you know, the expected move is pretty minimal, so we can, you know, we can maybe, you know, juice up how much we're offering, etc. So I think it, I mean, you know, possibly dangerous, but if there's a sort of prolonged bid in volatility, equity market volatility, there will be knock-on effects, absolutely. Mm. I really think there will be. Anyway.
And I guess sort of final wrap up. What's been happening is a bit few rumbles in private credit, which we've been warning people about.
Yes, I mean, I think that's just, well, a lot of, I suppose it's the classic private equity, private credit stuff. You know, where does this stuff mark? And why people have loved it is it doesn't really mark. So you just hold your mark. And I think there's been a few headlines about some, you know, occasionally things do, you know, do change hands at a, you know, whatever, 70 cents in the dollar. But they might be marked there for that trade, but then nobody else seems to be following that mark down, for instance. So you're kind of getting that classic mismatch where something's been marked at X in house A and Y in house B, sort of thing.
Well, as more of those prints occur, it gets harder to maintain those marks.
Yeah, yeah.
And there will, well, let's see, but we sense there could be a bit of a repricing coming and therefore a little bit of pain. So that's all of the history. If you are looking, you know, for those, you know, back issues of Horizon, you can find them on the Skadi website. If you are enjoying the Horizon Unpacked podcast and indeed all the other Skadi podcasts, you might consider joining the Skadi chat community on Discord, where we've also got all of the materials that we use to put together Horizon, put together the podcast as well. And that's just a safe space for people to share, you know, insights and discuss markets, auditing, compliance, investigations, meet other practitioners, indeed meet people who are looking to start their journey in the financial markets in the form of students as well. Very so true, really good community there. And that's available, I think, at the bottom of the Horizon newsletter, isn't it?
Exactly. Everyone can click on the logo and that's it. It's open for everyone. It's for free. Why not? Why not try it?
Everybody's welcome.
Exactly.
Even Grant Thornton and Prativity. Right, enough of that. Great stuff. So we're moving on, and we've written on, we've got a bit sort of climate focused.
We have.
DT. We're embracing. So we're talking about emissions risk transfers, and then something that we've done or enjoyed a lot of presentations on, Alexandra, Damien, myself, going to listen to law firms talking about the EU emissions trading scheme, but specific to shipping.
Yes, yeah. So that shipping has been brought into the fold beginning of this year. So there have been a fair few brilliant presentations we've been to at various law firms, just explaining what that means for these shippers. Because just not a slight spoiler for what we'll talk about later, but the EU emissions has been around for a while, the trading of them, but actually shipping are new, and it just brings in a whole different new raft of participants to that market. And whereas when it started out in the early days, people were given emissions for free if you're a polluter, for instance, as a way of encouraging sort of take up. Shipping has not had that. It's the way they're doing it is they're being phased in, so they're not having to pay the full whack, but there's no freebie, as it were, from them. So it was interesting from the shipping point of view. And when what we took away from going to those presentations was actually it's interesting from a trading perspective. I suppose that's with our old hats on, that's where we come from. So we tried to write just a bit about that from a sort of trading perspective, but more on that in a bit.
Well, I wonder about more of that in a bit. I wonder whether we should just go into that, because I think shout out to Louise Croucher at IncubEx, who we also were lucky to have a chat to a real practitioner in the market. And I hope Louise will take up our offer of coming and doing a full podcast, but we'll see. But she certainly has been very helpful and insightful to us about how this market works. Because as you said, we wanted to look at this from a much more trading and transactional perspective. So I wonder, why don't we deal with it, Damien?
Sure, okay.
Should we talk through that?
So yeah, as I said, the beginning of this year, shipping has been bought in. They, you know, the emissions has been around since, I think, 2005. But this is, it's certainly picking up steam, and I think with shipping coming in, although actually
steam and shipping detail, I like it. Sorry, Karen.
Although, as you were saying when we were chatting to Louise this morning, in fact, shipping is quite a small part of it, but there are a lot of ships out there. So actually, from a sort of logistical point of view, she's been saying it has been quite interesting because a lot of these ships have had to register, and it's the beneficial owner of the ship that registered, but obviously the shipping is strange because there's lots of charterers, and then people can rent them out, lease them out. I'm going to get all the terminology completely wrong. But, you know, the key is any journey you've taken from the beginning of this year, you have to offset. You have to buy the emissions allowance, that's the one I'm looking for. And then you then actually won't submit them through until next September. You have to have sort of recorded what they were by next March, but submitted in September. But this sort of brought up interesting things from what we were thinking about, the trading side of things. So the two ways you can trade these things are either via auction, and in the auction, it's relatively simple, as in the seller in the auction is the EU member states.
Right.
It's not, nobody else can sell. You know, you as an emitter or a buyer, and they are the seller, and that is it. And these auctions, talk to Louise, in fact, only about 20% of the total participants that could participate in that auction actually do. The bulk of the trading of this thing goes on in the secondary market. So there's a very liquid
future. And how often are the auctions, DT?
So I think they're almost daily. There's certainly, I think, I did have a quick look on the website. There's sort of three or four a week now. I think it started out less frequently, but I think they're a pretty regular thing now, arranged by EEX, the exchange. And then there's the futures market, which I was coming to, is very liquid and trades via ICE. And obviously the two are, you know, track each other pretty closely, as you'd expect. But, you know, we have just been sort of pondering what that would mean from a trading perspective. Certainly, as we said, you know, all the submissions have to be in by next September. You know, if the market is aware of that and people are having to chase, you know, they hopefully people will be buying emissions as they emit, but they might not be. You know, it can be quite a capital commitment. You might not want to be tying up capital for what, in effect, if you were shipping now, would be for 18 months. So you might go, well, you know, we'll put some money aside and we'll look to buy them in 18 months' time to then be able to deliver them and have them submitted. But obviously, if the price has doubled, trebled since by then, you know, there could be an issue. And if the market gets wind of the fact that people are, in effect, short, as in they haven't got enough of the emissions on hand, you know, there could be some interesting price moves there. So I think, you know, it was what that would bring into focus for a lot of financial institutions and control functions is just kind of looking at, you know, market abuse, market manipulation around this sort of, you know, these sort of key points where there might have been information leakage about who...
Because the point is, Damien, there are different participants in this market, aren't there? Obviously, we've talked about the shipping companies, the shipping owners, right, shipping charterers, but also the allowances for shipping are the same as in other industries.
Yes.
So there are other parties, so, you know, utilities, RWE, for example, and other players like that. And then you have the kind of trading... commodity trading houses, the likes of Trafigura, and so on, and the banks as well, in there as well. So there is a, you know, some of these people are price makers, and others are price takers. But it sounds like the shipping industry itself is pretty much a price taker and skewed to always going to want to be buyers.
Yeah.
So it's that age-old thing where, you know, salesman shouts out, and I'm giving it a bit of the old school kind of, what, where are they? I'm sure this market probably trades a little bit differently, and that's probably all electronic. But essentially, you know, when that customer comes on, they're going to be and which way to skew your price. And that's problematic, or can be problematic, for example. And I do think the point you raise about, you know, potential for, you know, squeezes, bottlenecks, particularly as people are, you know, up against one particular expiry horizon, if you like, when these things are submitted. And when they're submitted, they never come out,
that's
do
it,
they?
Yeah, they're destroyed.
That's also quite an interesting kind of analogy or analogous with other markets like Bitcoin, for example. Mm. And there's been a lot of kind of, you know, excitement in cryptocurrency and Bitcoin around the halving, which is a similar kind of thing, where there's just the rate of creation of these things is much lower, and that's caused an upward trajectory on the price. You kind of wonder on these allowances over time.
Well, it has been, you know, it's in a way, it's that's part of the clever bit of the design, is they are theoretically designed to increase in price over time because the future supply will become more and more limited. So, which the hope is, obviously, as they get more and more expensive, you are incentivized to emit less, invest in, you know, cleaner technology to therefore, you know, reduce your liability, as it were, through to the...
And the other sort of aspect of this, which is interesting, obviously you've got massive players like Maersk and Costco,
yep.
You know, and you know other big players, and these, you know, we're focusing on probably the EU market, but there are other regional markets around the globe as well. But the point's been made that there could be single owners of single ships,
yes,
yeah, that yeah. aren't really emitting even enough for one whole contract,
yeah.
So there are going to be aggregators.
Yeah.
Or that's some of the thing, because again, this is all kind of new territory for people. So it's got a lot of implications for, you know, new product approval and whether those committees are able to understand or have, you know, the understanding to consider all of the risks in this market. So you have to kind of wonder, well, you know, NPA, if someone comes and presents you that, you know, we want to do aggregation, you know, there's a hell of a lot of legal risk and legal unknowns, I would say, in that kind of stuff. So you really want to see, I think, as audit, looking at, say, the MPA function, if you're looking at that and how they're dealing with this kind of market, you know, what is the review process? Is it something where they're going to come back and revisit and just check and reassess, you know, whatever, 6 months in, 1 year in, when more is known? Or is this just going to be a case of we approve it and move on, which I would say is probably not the way to go with this kind of market. And then, of course, with anywhere we have aggregation by price makers or whatever, there is the opportunity for opacity in terms of where you fill the end buyer, the end customer as well. So there's lots of things to think about, I think, for this market. Any other comments on this? I mean, this market kicks off. It already kicked off at the end of the year, didn't it?
Yes, yeah, so we're live, but the first set of submission from the shipping industry won't take place until next year. So the sort of recording period will be this calendar year, 2024. You would have to submit what your emission has been by March, thank you, Hans, and then submit it properly through in September. And then obviously at that date in September, I think it's the 30th, those, you know, you would submit all those. And they will be destroyed. Those contracts then no longer exist. So now we touched on it here actually, and it was brought up at one of the presentations we went to. You know, if there's a legal dispute over how much you should be putting in, or you know, you're claiming that you emitted this much or whatever it was, and you were using this different fuel, and someone goes, no, well, you owe us this. You know, these court cases can go on for years, and you know, whereas the emissions come round on a yearly basis. So you might find that, well, what happens if you're in dispute of something over a submission date? Do you still have to submit and therefore you're liable for something? If you've submitted and then it turns out you didn't, how do you reclaim something that's now been destroyed? You know, so you're sort of effectively short to the EU states, I suppose it would be. So there's, you know, there's a lot to sort out.
and this is also just the EU. So this Correct, is, yeah. If you're doing a voyage inside of the EU, starting in an EU port and finishing in an EU port, it's 100% of the allowance.
Correct.
If you're starting or finishing in the EU, but starting and finishing outside, it's 50%.
Yeah.
And there's also a sort of a sliding scale for how, over the next number of years, that people will have to...
Yes, I think it's 40%. Of emissions this year, 70 next year, and then from 26, 100%.
100%. So yeah. There's a lot of complications going ahead. In a way, that gradation is kind of helpful because it gives people a bit of time to work through all this stuff. But no doubt there's going to be all kinds of, you know, rinky-dinks between now and then or in the coming months. So I think definitely an interesting one. And, you know, we do know the banks are involved in this market.
Yep.
You know, the likes of JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Macquarie, you know, just some of the names that are involved in here. So, you know, this is definitely something that, you know, auditors, compliance professionals, wholesale financial firms should be considering and also be looking to see if other people are going to re-enter Barclays is a name that has re-entered this market after a long time. So there are, you know, people coming back into this kind of area. So one definitely to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the other area we were looking at, Damien, was the emissions risk transfer.
Yes.
Which I think is, a bit more... akin to the kind of structured credit sort of side of the SCARDI fold, if you like, rather than just the pure trading. But I think this is a really interesting phenomenon that's, I guess, inevitably going to come back. And I think before, one thing I'll sort of say, but, you know, before we dive into this is, you know, a lot of the financial commitments made by the banks around lending and carbon intensive lending were sort of made 2 or 3 years ago. And definitely getting the sense that there's a little bit of a softening of position, I would say,
yep,
around some of this stuff. And I think that's a very interesting kind of nuance in the market, because, again, I think it's one of those really difficult things for people in the control functions to kind of, you know, understand where the lie of the land is and when to be pushing hard or when to be kind of understanding that the, you know, the regulator is allowing, you know, the relaxation of position or is more accommodating.
Mm.
And I think that is the rule of thumb, isn't it? It's, at the end of the day, it's got to be around what they're seeing externally rather than internally, because the front office will, of course, be pushing very hard for, oh, no, definitely not. We need to change all this. But it's interesting. We have read that there's been a little bit of presentation, a bit more informally,
mm-hmm,
to the regulators, but sort of kind of in-house meetings where, you know, people have expressed the position that actually this may be much harder than people have said. So anyway, something to sort of think about. But we've been looking at the emissions risk transfer, which is something that's come out of, you know, the significant risk transfer. So where people have been able, or banks have been able, to transfer credit risk to external investors. And, you know, that has been a very good thing for ongoing lending, because once you can clear those credit lines and move that risk elsewhere, you can then go on to lend to many other counterparties and expand your lending. And that should underpin, you know, expansion in the economy. So generally, you know, the regulators, central banks, have been very supportive of significant risk transfers, and they are generally done under the purview of the regulators. You know, if you're considering one of these, if you're considering a significant risk transfer, then you really need to consult, you know, in Europe, you'd be consulting with ECB banking supervision. You'd give them at least 3 months notice. You know, they have a look, you know, really scrutinize what you're doing, assess whether it truly is a significant risk transfer. You get given the appropriate treatment,
yeah,
and off you go. And that has the effect of, you know, reducing, you know, your RWA, your risk-weighted assets, the amount of capital that you're putting against stuff. And that's very, very good from a profitability standpoint for the banks, and allows them to, you know, stimulate lending. So you can see why the significant risk transfer has been a successful product. And certainly the numbers of significant risk transfers has increased a lot in the last 48 months. These things are becoming much more common. Late last year, the European Banking Authority really put in, you know, reporting on the role of environmental and social risks into the prudential framework. So that kind of really wrapped up a lot of that into the lending that institutions are doing. Now, it's, you know, it's definitely the point that they are, the EBA, the European Banking Authority, are, you know, pointing out that these risks are not entirely new categories of risks, but, you know, they're traditional categories of risk. So credit, operational risk, market risk, liquidity risk, concentration risk, but presented via new channels.
Mm.
And certainly there is concern, and you can see it around the globe at any time. I mean, we had massive floods in Portugal. You know, I saw pictures of Lisbon with kind of, you know, rain rushing down the streets, carrying cars away, and so on. You know, the financial damage from climate, and therefore the, you know, the risk that institutions are exposed to, is definitely made people realize they need to think very hard about that, and also what the impact is going to be on you know, on balance sheets and just the, you know, the exposure of institutions. Now, the other thing that I think has been observed is that, because, you know, when you're looking at significant risk transfers, you're looking back at, you know, the modelling historically, and what has the impact of things been, and that's, you know, a real kind of cornerstone of a lot of these frameworks. Well, you know, with the, in the case of climate, it's kind of uncertain, because things are, or things appear are so to fast, be moving much quicker. You know, and that seems to be you know, the case, and we, you know, people just looking, you know, our experience in life, we would probably all feel that the extremes are becoming more common, if you like, these events. So that's the other thing too that's made it kind of harder in terms of modelling this into to the framework. But if we understand it, it's been proposed to do emissions risk transfers, which is where banks would be able to cut the carbon footprint of their balance sheets. So, you know, moving some of the lending that they've done to carbon-intensive industries off to external partners, in the same way that they would do under a significant risk transfer. The difference is that reduction of emissions is provided by linking the transfer with some kind of, you know, new green project, mm-hmm. or some kind of existing green project, or alternatively, for pledges to free up, or using the freed up capital to then use these towards environmental projects. So, you know, in essence, it sounds all very good, sounds all very reasonable. But of course, and as we've observed, things are moving probably a little bit in terms of, you know, where people's stances on some of this, you know, environmental stuff. And the other thing, actually, Damien, that because I, you know, I've been to some really interesting stuff in the last couple of weeks, just actually talking about security, you know, and obviously, you know, we've been talking about geopolitical risk. That was one of our, you know, calls in our 2024 emerging risk publication. And, you know, at that time we were focusing much more on Ukraine and Russia. But of course, you know, now you've got things moving in the Middle East as well. You know, the other thing is just the sort of the mix, the energy security that countries feel that they need.
Yeah.
You know, they're recognizing that actually, you know, if you, you know, the proposal I heard last week from the Labour Party in the UK was to, you know, really put all these offshore wind farms out there, which is, you know, sounds great. But strategically, for those to be attacked by a foreign party would, you know, annihilate the UK's capability. So you can't just put your eggs into one basket. And I think it's that sort of that mix of energy, an energy portfolio, if you like, which means that probably some of those moves, you know, to banish traditional forms of energy may not be as quick to move as they were, right? So anyway, just something to sort of think about. But I think what is the concern around these emission risk transfers generally is, you know, because they are a significant risk transfer, and significant risk transfer is about allowing to enable more lending, what you don't want to have is effectively just an emissions risk transfer that keeps feeding those carbon intensive industries. So it's really critical that you've got that link to these new green projects. The other one is really how much, you know, how do you measure that green project? Or, you know, if you're freeing up this much lending, how big does your related green project have to be? So, you know, I've seen, as you know, I think the European Investment Bank did an emissions risk transfer recently where they had a green project that was double the size of the freed up lending,
right,
for example, freed up capital. So that's a real sort of significant kind of, you know, intent, a signal of intent. But then, you know, I can see situations where people might, you know, present, you know, a green project talk about the green project, but actually not really make too much of the size of it.
Yes.
And therefore, you can see the problem is that later, when people start to really scrutinise that, then you get into the allegations of, you know, is this greenwashing? So it's definitely an area of risk for institutions. So it's not, you know, these aren't new risks. It's just that, you know, risks presenting themselves in other ways. So I think, you know, what we are saying to people that are working in, you know, audit and control functions, places like new product approval and so on, is, you know, what should you be looking at? So, you know, in your institution, how would an emissions risk transfer be identifiable as different from a significant risk transfer? Because, of course, you know, you'd like to see that there would be this link to the green project, there'd like to be this link to the pledges. But of course, we know once you have something through NPA, a product, mm-hmm. and it's grandfathered and it's done, then, you know, you will want to use that pathway. So you may not be, or you may be disingenuous about the product that you are bringing in the business. So that is something that I think people should be thinking about. Are the people on the NPA able to recognise the specific attributes of an emissions risk transfer? And again, looking at the origination, where these are linked to a related green product, you know, how is that ongoing link monitored? Where it's linked to a commitment to pledge freed up capital to environmental or social projects, you know, how would the execution of those pledges be monitored? Because, you know, ultimately, this risk transfer happens, these other things could not then follow through.
Yeah.
And that's a risk. And how would you know? How do you maintain that in your institution? How do you see that execution is linked to this credit portfolio, you know, in your books? Mm. You know, that's not an easy thing to look at. I mean, luckily, these are pretty big trades that are quite few and far between that have to be, you know, looked at. But also, as we've said, you know, significant risk transfers are under the purview of, you know, the regulators.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you get this wrong, or people are disingenuous, they don't follow through, and the mood music changes, people could find themselves, you know, quite exposed, I think. And then, you know, just on the risk management side, you know, how do risk management recognize, you know, the challenge of follow-on lending to carbon-intensive borrowers? You know, would they realize that all of this lending is because of freed up lines, or is it a consequence of freed up lines? And how could they just, you know, be on top of that? So I think those are, you know, the risks that we foresee with this product. I think, you know, as a general observation, you know, climate is becoming so important. You know, working with audit, when we started, no one would have had anyone responsible for climate as a portfolio. Certainly, you know, we now know, you know, most institutions have got someone, you know, chief auditor looking at that. Generally, have come from the risk function because it's considered a risk, and that makes sense. But certainly, this is going to be, you know, an emerging area and continue to be so. Which people are going to have to look at. So I think that's a kind of bit of a gallop through Horizon Unpacked this month. We've got through in about 30 minutes or so. Is that right?
It's 33 minutes.
Okay. 33. Look at that. That's very, very good.
Trying to get them down slowly.
Good stuff. So thank you for listening.
Yep, thank you, everyone.
Hope you find this insightful. As I say, if you wish to join the conversation, do look at the or do consider joining the Skadi Discord, Skadi's chat community, where you can talk about all things financial and other things too, mm-hmm. and get to know the team. Else, you know, keep your eyes peeled for Horizon. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you.